for supporting KKRN.
Sorry.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
And this is Examine Life. Plato said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." So on each of our shows, we examine the different aspects of human nature, human politics, to try to understand the deeper meanings of what we do and how we act.
And tonight we have a thunder and lightning storm outside, so hopefully we... And it's going to get loud because now it's starting to pour down rain. But we also have the privilege of having Mark Baird on the show tonight. He's called in, and we're going to, again, talk about the state of Jefferson.
You can hear the rain pouring down. You still with us, Mark?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Pat and Steve. I appreciate the time.
We had a very good show last time we talked to you. You had all of us excited, and we're really looking forward to tonight.
We'll start out with some basic questions on what is the mechanism or precedent to allow this to happen, make a new state?
Well, the precedent is Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution, and in conjunction with that, it is Article 2, Section 1 of the California Constitution, which says that all just powers derive from the people, and when government fails to serve the people, they have the right to change that government, change or alter that government to suit their needs. And Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution is the section that the founders put in. It's literally a paragraph because they foresaw the need for the entry of new states into the Union and also the potential for changing the character of states by forming new states from the territory of existing states. And this has been done before in our history, by the way.
And why would the state of California let this happen?
Well, the state of California isn't going to let it happen. We're going to cause them to make it happen. And what we need to do is we need to educate people in Southern California. We need to help them understand why we need to do this and why they would win from it as well. And I believe that when we examine the lack of representation in the North State and also the dilution of vote that's occurred through the leadership of the California courts and legislature, we can see that if they don't allow it to happen, that we will have a pretty good challenge in court over dilution of vote. And that's something that that we can change. And if we do so, then we would be able to increase California's representation by something like 1,600 assembly people and 1,400 senators.
Is that within the state or the federal government?
That would be within the state itself because we have a dilution of vote here, and we would challenge the state. In other words, if the state of California does not allow us to separate, then we will mount a challenge for dilution of vote, and we would either attempt to overturn Reynolds versus Sims, which took us away from the federal model of government, and at the very least, we would alter the representative ratio in the state of California, which is the worst in the nation. Now, George Washington said one for 30,000 is democracy and one for 40,000 is tyranny. And in the state of California right now, we have one state senator for every 900,000 people and one assembly person for every 450,000 people, and that's not representation. So if the state of California ignores us or refuses to allow us to separate through a 51% vote in the legislature, we will then sue them, and all of the counties who have signed declarations and petitions to withdraw would have standing in that suit in order to change the representative model of the state of California. Now, if you can imagine California with almost 2,000 assembly people and 1,500 senators, that's obviously untenable. I can't imagine Sacramento with that many legislators running around loose with a pen and the checkbook.
And so the change would obviously dilute some of that power.
Well, that's exactly right. It would. And that's what we would do, is change that power. Or the unspoken threat is, if you allow us to separate peacefully, we will not attack status quo politics in California. We'll simply leave, establish our own government that suits us and our needs and represents Northern California adequately, and you can stick with whatever you're doing now.
And that should sound reasonable. What would you see as a time frame if the blocks that we need to fall into place with a little bit of nudging, what kind of time frame do people see as the possible date that this could occur?
Well, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So we have a 2 to 5 year timeline for this. And if it takes longer, it takes longer. We're here for the long term. We're here to finish this. We're here to secure liberty for our children and our grandchildren. And if we don't do this, we won't survive here in the North State. The taxes and the regulations are becoming more and more tyrannical every single day until finally we'll all be broken. We'll all be gone.
I was encouraged to see, I think it was Stockton, that the was it a circuit court judge that decided that the county or the city was going to be able to separate the pension funds from in the course of their bankruptcy. I'm not putting that very well, but I thought that was a great ruling.
What they did was they declared CalPERS as an unsecured creditor, and I'm very familiar with that type of ruling because my company, World Airways, was just shut down, and our pension liability was declared an unsecured creditor by the federal bankruptcy court. So we literally lost our pension in that settlement, and the CalPERS people have had the same thing happen to them. And I have some bad news for them. In a state where you have $890 million in unfunded liability, the majority of which are pension, underfunded pensions, that's going to happen again and again and again and again and again.
Right, and that was a great way to open that door to help people understand that this is all a bubble and you can't rely on these kind of things. They always see the state as some kind of a safety bank where there are no possibilities of these kind of failures, but it can happen to anyone.
What if Shasta County becomes like the hole in the donut of the counties that join in, and they don't, since they're not allowing us to participate in this discussion or debate?
Kind of interesting, and that's an interesting way to put it. Your county supervisors have made the decision that you will not even hear the question posed. They don't even want to talk about it, and they used a procedural mechanism. I think it was Kehoe that did it, and he proposed that in order to even listen to the discussion, it would need a majority vote of the board, which is positively not only despotic, but it's probably illegal in some way. We're pretty sure there were Brown Act violations during that whole process because they communicated prior to the meeting, at least three of them did. They had typed, prepared statements before the meeting started. So they couldn't possibly have ginned those statements up after hearing the argument. But at any rate, the people of Shasta County elected those folks, and the people of Shasta County will have to deal with their employees because, quite frankly, boards of supervisors are nothing more than employees of the people of Shasta County. They serve you. They serve the people. And when they fail to serve the people, it is the people that can do something about it. But fortunately for the state process, we don't need them. It would be nice to have a declaration from your Board of Supervisors, but Article 4, Section 3 really doesn't have any rules. If we could get a declaration from the City of Reading, and we're hopeful after the November election, and one from, say, Anderson, the City of Anderson, if that was indicative of more than 50% of the people in Shasta County's wishes, then away we go.
Mm. I see. The Board of Supervisors, the county, had like a 3-minute discussion on this whole thing when they voted to decline us, the people who reside here, to be able to debate and discuss this. How can that happen, a 3-minute discussion on something so monumental in history?
Well, like I said, I don't think they served their constituents very well. In fact, one of them lied. One of them, Mr. Baugh, had said in all of his campaign stops, or a few of them anyway, I don't want to say all of them, that's not fair, but he did say in a few of them, and he said also to me, that he would have the initiative placed on the ballot so that the people could decide. And he said that, of course, prior to his election, but once he was elected, then he voted with Mr. Modi and Mr. Keogh and Ms. Giacomini to deny the people of Shasta County the opportunity to even listen to the discussion.
I don't think most of us realize he happens to be my representative, and I had emailed him a number of times requesting that he support the idea or at least provide a discussion. And
well, that's funny, too, because he told us that he never got any emails from his constituents.
Oh, I emailed him a number of times because I want to be part of the discussion, if nothing else, because you can't get educated on the subject unless you're part of the debate or somebody that you can listen to is part of that debate. And I think we were denied that. And I think a lot of people in the county didn't realize that the county supervisors were actually elected in June. They weren't going to be on the November ballot. And it's like most politicians, they put all the big decisions till after the elections before they actually tell anybody how they view that particular item.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you have to ask yourself, are they serving the public? Are they serving the people who elected them doing things like that?
No, I don't think so. And I hope the city at least gives us the opportunity to discuss it and debate it.
And we need to have enough people to overcome their lethargy and feel like they want to do something about it.
Well, see, there you've hit on something there that's very, very, very important. And that is that this is a movement of the people. This has to be done by the people. This is for the people. You see, the people created the state of California. This wasn't a state with a state government waiting for people to come. It had people in it before we were a republic and before we were a state. It was loosely governed by Mexico, a group of individuals, and I'm sure everybody's familiar with history, and some of it was good and some of it wasn't, but it's all a fact, and it's all a foregone conclusion that people gathered and created the Constitution of the state of California. And you ask yourselves, why did they do that? Why didn't we just stick with Mexico? And they did that in order to secure their freedom. That's the preamble of the California Constitution. In the face of, I forget what it is, I'm paraphrasing, but they thank Almighty God for their freedom. And in order to secure that freedom, they created the Constitution of the state of California. And so people were the ones that created government, not the other way around. Government serves the people. The creation is never more important than the creators. And the shoe is on the other foot now. Somehow we the people, and we've allowed this. This is our own fault. We have allowed government to subjugate us when it is we who control government. And it's people like Mr. Baugh and Mr. Keogh and Mr. Modi. I believe it was Mr. Keogh that said to one of our committee members that the Constitution is vague and unenforceable. Vague and unenforceable, and therefore the document's irrelevant. And this guy is a former, I don't know, wasn't he a former policeman or something? But anyway, what part of the Constitution is vague and unenforceable? The part where the president serves for 4 years? The part where we have courts or where we have judges or houses of representatives? No, I know the part he's referring to. That's the part where the people have inalienable rights. The Bill of Rights is what he's referring to as vague and unenforceable. And I say to you that that's the most enforceable and concise part of the Constitution, because that is the part where the people secured their liberty.
It's pretty straightforward. You know, the old libertarian chant, our rules are don't hurt other people and don't take their stuff.
That's a pretty good rule.
Yes. And our last show, we discussed voting and apathy, how few people vote and all the excuses they come up with for not voting. And this is, you know, we've gotten these representatives because a lot of people didn't vote or pay attention. And it's easy just to vote for that familiar name rather than what they stand for, because most of the time they don't want to tell us what their positions are.
And of course, having this discussion, we have to remember on our community station that we can't actually have calls to action to specific actions, but we can talk about things like voting and the things we're discussing tonight.
Yes, and we discussed voting extensively in our last show, but this is something that is not even on the ballot in this at this point in time. This is something that's going to have to go to the legislation.
Speaking of the people, if you could just briefly illuminate for us some of the ideas or thoughts that proponents are having about how healthcare would look in a Northern California, because I'm in the healthcare fields, And a lot of people are concerned about what's coming with this so-called Affordable Health Care Act. And I'm wondering if they have any questions about what might happen in a new Northern California.
Especially with so many people being on Medi-Cal up here.
Well, interestingly enough, now, mind you, I'm not the King of Jefferson, so some of these things aren't for me to say. They're for a state's constitutional convention.
Right. I'm looking for thoughts and opinions.
And I have my own ideas of what I'd like to see and what could happen, certainly, but they're just my ideas. They're not necessarily how things would work out. First of all, federal programs are federal programs, and because of the equal footing doctrine, we would be entitled to all of the federal goodies that any state our size with our population and our financial situation with our resources and our urban centers and so on would be entitled to. And we can't be denied that. So any federal dollars would still come to us. And in fact, probably at first there would be more federal dollars because we wouldn't have as many people as California, of course. So Medicare, Social Security, all that stuff would stay the same. Any federal program where the feds want to blow the money, we'll help them spend it. And that's, of course, goes without saying. Pension contracts. Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution says no state can make any law that changes contract law. So those contracts, CalPERS, CalSTRS, whatever you have, if you have a contract with your employer, that contract remains in force until it expires. And at that point, your employer is free to negotiate a new contract, and you are free to either accept that or reject it and quit your job or keep your job with the new conditions or whatever happens. So the state of Jefferson has no intention of changing any of that. That's not within our jurisdiction to change. That's between the people and whoever they work for.
That's true, and freedom being the key word there, free
exactly.
to choose.
You'd be free to choose. Now, I think that CalPERS has shown itself to be unsustainable. I think pretty much everybody agrees with that. But the problem is what to do about it. And in my opinion, there's nothing that can be done with existing contracts, as I said before, and no one wants to. I think somewhere down the road, we have to develop a system that protects the employee and doesn't break the taxpayers' back. And I think we're smart enough to do that. It would come in the form of a defined contribution as opposed to a defined benefit, something that could be budgeted and counted on in advance, something the employee could count on in advance. And also, once you're vested, you have control of the money and can never be taken away from you, or whether an entity goes bankrupt or not. So there are a lot of ways to address that, but certainly no one has any intention changing anyone's employment contract as it's currently stated. Well, and any changes we make, we would probably make through attrition. So no one who is currently employed would lose anything, it wouldn't cost anybody anything, and it's not our intention to change anyone's retirement plan.
Well, patients like that Medi-Cal, which are not necessarily employees, how would they transition over?
Well, I know that Medi-Cal is California's add-on to Medicaid, so right. The new state would be able to the right people in place could come up with a program that's much more equitable and much more affordable and probably give better health care.
Well, I mean, that would be a plan that we would have to come up with, arguably, and it would be a plan we would need experts to come up with. And also, it would have to be a plan that would serve the people without breaking the taxpayer, because obviously anything that you do, someone somewhere has to pay for.
That's right.
So we have to find ways to do these things so that they're affordable and they don't overly burden the productive people, because guess what the productive people do? They leave and they go to lower tax environments.
I think if we create a little more sense of personal responsibility related to health care, a lot of these problems would start to be solved.
It would also, in the defined pension programs where you contribute some on your own rather than have an agency or government or employer pay everything, it makes you more respectful of what it is you get. And I don't think anyone should be paid 100% to stay home after they've retired or quit their job.
Well, I think that's certainly something to think about. I've got to agree with you. You know, like I say, it's going to take some very bright minds, and we have them. I mean, we have a lot of PhDs and people who have a lot of business experience and people in this state who are who are qualified to comment on things like that. And we will make plans, and good plans, and there'll be more efficient plans than the state of California has. They have a tendency to just throw money at everything.
Right. To turn this around to a little bit different professionals we were talking about and the bright minds that we have, there are a lot of people in the state of California that are licensed. They're contractors or they're nurses or they're real estate people. And I can only assume that these people would be grandfathered in into the new state until such a time as their license needs to be renewed, like it has to be in California, that it would be renewed in the new state.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's the easiest way to do it. And I guarantee you, when we finish our transition, we're not going to have 571 state agencies. So a lot of people who have the right to do something and now have had that turned into a permittable offense to do that very same thing, in all probability won't need those permits in the state of Jefferson.
Wouldn't that be nice? To have government recede from our lives instead of continually try and take our lives over.
Right now with people who have sleep apnea, I have to keep their masks behind an 8-foot chain link fence in my warehouse so that the masks won't hurt anyone.
Yes.
And that's a state regulation.
You don't want them to get free and attack anyone.
So that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of, and those are the kinds of things that California does constantly. They're intrusive into people's lives in area where government has no business. And our founders were very clear about those things. Government has one function and one function only, and that is to secure the liberties we hold most dear.
Wouldn't it be nice to have government answer to us instead of us being, we're getting to the point of being fearful for government and all of its many regulations and agencies and everyone else. You feel like no matter what you do, you're going to break a law or a rule or not comply somehow.
Well, I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said people who are afraid of their government is tyranny, and a government that's afraid of its people is liberty. So I am afraid, and we've done this to ourselves. This is our own fault. We've allowed this to happen, and we've encouraged it by failing to engage in the process and failing to hold politicians who claim to represent us accountable for their actions.
Speaking of liberty, some of the young people who are often agents of change, has there been much involvement of youth groups such as Young Americans for Liberty or other groups that are interested in more of their freedoms?
Yeah, we have a significant Facebook presence. I'm told there are like 80,000 people on our Facebook page, and I'm pretty sure a number of them are young people because a lot of us dinosaurs don't even know how to work Facebook.
That's right.
But also, I have a great story. I met a group of kids from Shasta College. They were actually brought to me, and they had some questions about the state of Jefferson. And I explained the whole thing to them, and they became very excited. They weren't taught the Constitution in their academic schooling. They weren't taught the founders' intentions for our country. They weren't taught what powers the citizens have versus what power government claims to have. And when they heard these things, they were absolutely amazed that they'd been hoodwinked all these years, and they were kind of mad at their instructors. And so those four kids were talking about setting up a booth at the school, and we need to do a better job of that. We need to do a better job of reaching out to the youth, and especially these college students. They're bright, they're articulate, they have a lot of energy, and that's the group we need to help us get this finished.
And I think we can do that. I think their professors are the same thing at this point in time that their professors were fighting against back in the 60s.
Yeah, pretty much. In fact, their professors are the people from the 60s. I mean, Bill Ayers and Angela Davis and all of those guys, all of those radicals, decided instead of overthrowing the government of the United States, they'd just get jobs as tenured professors, and they'd educate us out of our liberty. And that's essentially what they've been involved in for the last 40 years.
And that's exactly right. And I think that's getting stale enough that I think the youth are ready, and we just need to get them involved.
Unfortunately, I don't think young people are taught anything. I don't even think they teach civics anymore, and there's no constitutional, like, you know, why and how our government works other than, gee, aren't we terrible that we've done this to this minority group, or we've done that, or we took it from the Indians, or, you know, it's almost gotten to be the point that Columbus is a bad word.
Well, what they've done is they've transformed education so that we're expected to apologize for America and apologize all over the world for everything that America's done. And I have some bad news for these guys. America was the miracle that changed the world forever. It changed monarchies into republics. It changed governments. It changed people. It changed economics. And as Daniel Webster said, hold on to the Constitution with all your heart, because miracles don't tend to cluster. And what's happened once in 6,000 years may never happen again. And he was right. And what we need to do is we need to take our education system back. And in the state of Jefferson, we propose that the counties and the parents and families decide what curriculum their children are taught. Federal government and state government has no business in the education of your children, because they always have an agenda.
What a refreshing idea.
Part of that, I think, is tied to money. And most of us, unfortunately, are always looking at how am I going to benefit financially from that decision, or, you know, my family or my kids or something, they want to have a financial check tied to something. And the federal government realizes that, and now they hold that carrot out about federal funds, you do X or you don't get the money type of concept. And I think that's how we're getting hoodwinked into the new educational systems.
Well, that's certainly true, but here's a concept that a lot of people don't really understand, and that's the concept of liberty. Because if you don't have liberty, and as a very famous constitutional speaker, Chris Ann Hall, says, if you can't define liberty, how can you protect it? And if you can't define tyranny, how can you defend against it? And liberty are our inalienable rights. There are rights, essentially, they are our property rights. You have the right to your property, and no one should be allowed or able to tell you what to do with that property, or take it from you, or tax you out of it, or cause you to get a permit to use it. That is your property. You have the inalienable right to it. And unless property is secure, liberty can't exist. And so, and that Ben Franklin said that. And so the concept of liberty is very important, because without liberty, I don't care about the money, because you won't be allowed to keep what you've earned. You know, every farmer and plowman knows the difference between good government and bad government. And the reason he knows it is because he can see immediately which products of his labor he's allowed to keep by government. And so if we don't have liberty, you won't be allowed to keep the money, and you don't own the property. You're simply borrowing it from the government, provided you get their permission to do whatever it is you think you're going to do on it. So we must secure liberty, or education, property, money, none of those things mean anything. And our problem is our politicians, who are supposed to be our employees, are the ones stealing our liberty.
I've heard our founders be referred to as elitist because of property ownership, but I don't think they understand that our country was the first country that said anybody can own property. If you don't have to have a social status, you don't even have to have a job. If you can afford to buy it and that person's willing to sell it to you under credit or some other terms other than cash money, it's okay. And anybody can vote. You don't have to own property to vote either.
Well, that's another thing that the apologists want us to do. They want us to think, they want everyone to think that we should apologize for being property owners, and that all of our founders were rich, fat, white men who stole things from everyone and caused the rest of the world to live in chains and poverty. And that absolutely couldn't be further from the truth. Our founding fathers, first of all, there were some very strong women who were among our founding fathers, if you will. Mary Ois Warren, for one. We had people of all descriptions who were our founding fathers, and they certainly weren't greedy people. When John Hancock was standing in Boston and he was helping Washington direct artillery at buildings in the town, he pointed to his own house and he said, "Blow that one up first, because I think that's the command center for General Gage. Oh, and by the way, that's my house." I mean, these people risked everything. They risked their fortunes, they risked their lives, their children, their families. They weren't a bunch of rich white people intent on being selfish with the goods of the world. Far from it. They were people who shed their blood, their treasure, and their honor in order to secure for the entire world.
Yes. And I think there was a movie out Mel Gibson made that they took a great liberties with, but it was called The Patriot, and it was very much about the sacrifice they made as a family. Personally, you know, it's not just property and that kind of stuff. There were a lot of personal sacrifices.
Yeah, at the end of that first year, they hadn't really won any battles. They were taking on the largest or most powerful military on the planet, and they stayed with it in spite of all of that.
Yes, they stayed with it, and they took a country from the most powerful military force on Earth, and they weren't in the majority, by the way. They had politicians like Les Baugh and David Keogh and Leonard Modi and Jack Amini. They had politicians like that they had to contend with as well. They called them the Tories. So in spite of all of that, those people secured liberty for their posterity. Now here's our problem. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance.
That's right.
And we have failed to be vigilant. We have literally almost lost our liberty because we stopped paying attention to the people who are supposed to serve us and are in our employ.
That's right. We're going to take a little break here, just a couple of minutes, and we'll be back with Mark Baird. This is Steve and Pat on Examine Life, KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen. Okay, we're back on Examine Life. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
And we're with Mark Baird, and we're talking about the state of Jefferson. We tend to get very excited on this subject because freedom is something everybody should get excited about. Mark, when California separates into two states, you've talked about this on our show previously, but this is probably one of the big concerns people have because they don't understand how it works. How would the state debt start? How much debt would we bring over from California? And what sources of income, how can we offset that debt and also take care of the needs of the state?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, according to the state's attorney general, Camilla Harris, and once again, this is not my opinion, this is the state's attorney general through the legislative analyst's office, and this was over the six states proposal, but it does apply to us, even though that's not going to go forward. The same concept applies to the state of Jefferson. And that would be, since we operate under the Reynolds versus Sims opinion, where the Supreme Court gave itself the power to change the Constitution without the benefit of the legislature or the people, we now have a situation where things are apportioned only according to population. And so, according to Camilla Harris, the state of Jefferson would inherit 3% of California's long-term debt. Now, California only admits to $340 million in long-term debt, or $340 billion, I'm sorry, in long-term debt. And so we would be responsible for 3% of that. And that's certainly manageable. Now, if we wait 10 or 20 years until that's, a trillion or 2 trillion, we probably wouldn't be able to do it. But 3% of $340 billion. And once again, when West Virginia separated from Virginia, it took 150 years to work out the settlement of the long-term debt. And West Virginia obtained very favorable terms, principal only, no interest, and I don't think they even paid the whole amount, but I can't testify to that. So certainly we can handle that long-term debt, and it is achievable if we act now. But if we wait, California has been on the same economic track for 50 years, and if we wait for another 50 years to see if this turns out differently, we probably wouldn't be able to have a state split and make it work.
That all makes sense. I think people just aren't thinking about it in the right terms, and that's why I wanted to have you illuminate it again. It's not what they think it would be.
What is our initial funding going to be to start the state and create the agencies and pay the, state employees, whomever they might be? How are we going to get funding for that?
Well, of course, another misconception that a lot of people have is that the North State is broke. And we're not broke. We have been impoverished by the state of California. We have vast resources. First of all, we have property tax revenue, but that's considered state money. And it, in the state of Jefferson, it would be monies, and we envision the way this would work is the counties would collect the property taxes and send the state what it needs to operate, not the state collecting the property taxes from the counties and then giving the counties back what the state thinks they need to operate.
I like that.
We would have a very different tax structure. In addition to that, we were blessed with a tremendous amount of resource. First of all, once again, according to the state LAO report and the state's attorney general, something over 90% of the water comes from the state of Jefferson. We have bountiful forest. In Siskiyou County alone, payment in lieu of taxes for timber harvest on federal ground only, this is federal trust land only, and mind you, we're not talking about clear cutting. We're talking about harvest down to the federal timber harvest plan that survived NEPA and CEQA and many court challenges, used to pay for our entire road department, our entire sheriff's department, and our public instruction, our education department. And it paid for all of it. And so we have a bounty of resources in the North State. And with responsible use, which we could do without the harness of the state of California pulling us away from those businesses, because, mind you, all products touch one of these four businesses: mining, ranching, timber, livestock, and energy production. And livestock and farming go together, of course. And we had all four of them in the North State. Now we're down to about one of them, and that one is in danger. So our economy has shrunk something like 72% in the last 30 or 40 years. And all we would have to do is restore that economy, and we'd have plenty of funding to have a very viable, financially effective state.
That shrinking has been caused by state regulation.
Absolutely. It wasn't caused because people didn't want to work. It was caused because of the spotted owl, the coho salmon. In fact, we have a governor now who, by the way, considers himself above the law. He's on his way to a fourth term in a state where governors are limited to two terms. But our governor, in his infinite wisdom, has declared that large hydroelectric projects are not renewable energy. Can you imagine that?
Water is not a renewable energy over the dam.
That's right. Water is not a renewable resource over the dam. And gravity, apparently, is not clean energy.
It's because it's not a law they came up with.
Well, it's also because it's not a program where a lot of people get a lot of money handed to them under the table.
Yeah, there's no privilege there.
There's no privilege. There are very few grants to develop large dams, but there are a lot of grant money. In fact, Proposition 1, the water bond, is going to have hundreds of millions of dollars to outfits called the Coachella Valley Conservancy and the Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy and the Ocean Conservancy. And by gosh, instead of securing water for Californians, they're going to be saving the fish and saving this and saving that and mitigating climate change and building bike paths and trash can receptacle areas all over the state of California. And out of that $7.8 billion, they hope to build one reservoir.
You talked about someone saying that the Constitution was vague. Some of the rules about that money they plan to give to those agencies, that's vague.
It's pretty vague, and it's going to cost the California taxpayers $360 million a year for the next 40 years.
Ironically, our next show is going to be talking about the initiative, so we will have a discussion on pros and cons on both sides of that on our next show.
But government malfeasance in the state of Jefferson is going to be a crime that's punishable with jail.
Yeah, if we can only enforce that.
You can enforce it because we are the people. We have all the jurisdiction. Government has only the jurisdiction that we entrust to them on a temporary basis as long as they are using that jurisdiction to secure our liberty.
I guess the strength of the words of how we set up our state constitution will go a long way towards ensuring that you can actually enforce those kind of laws.
Well, here's another thing that California's done. The California Constitution has been amended 521 times in the last 163 or 64 years. 521 times. Now, when you look at the federal constitution, it's been amended 17 times in the last 229 or 30 years. And a couple of those times, people look back and said, boy, that was a mistake, like the alcohol amendment, and repealed.
Well, California has a tendency to have a knee-jerk reaction to everything.
Well, what California does is what Judge Posner of the Seventh Circuit said, and Judge Posner framed this from a legal perspective. He said, evil enters the legal system when jurists embrace the cause of the day. And what California legislators do constantly is they find a cause du jour. For example, the assault weapons ban. That was brought forth by Senator Leland Yee. It was embraced thoroughly by all the urban legislators who said, oh, this will end crime forever. And all Leland Yee wanted to do was make sure that the Chinese gangs that he was supplying weapons to had better weapons than the people that needed protection from them. Because he's been indicted for federal weapons trafficking charges.
I remember hearing about that.
So where was his heart when he enacted the quote, assault weapons ban? Was it truly to protect the people of California? I don't think so. But even though he's been disgraced, even though he's not a legislator anymore, even though he's under threat of prison and he's in the court system now, does that statute still stand? Well, of course it does.
Yes.
Because never let a good crisis go to waste. And once you've got some power, you're never going to let it go, even when you know you were wrong. And that's something that we won't allow through the constitutional framework of the state of Jefferson. Our constitution is going to be extremely difficult to change, almost impossible. It will take a vast majority of the people and the legislature together to change our constitution so that future generations don't lose their liberty. Why are we doing this? We're doing it not for the money. We're not doing it for any reason except to secure liberty for our posterity, which is our duty and our responsibility as citizens of this country.
I want to bring up the 1992 proposal for the state of Jefferson that I believe this state, California State Assembly, passed, but it failed in the Senate. Is there any history on that that might shine some light on this time?
Well, it failed in the Senate because there were some personal problems between Senator Johansson and Stan Statham and the president pro tem at the time. I don't know what those issues were, but it never made it out of committee, which is a really good example of a small group of people prohibiting liberty by the people themselves. And we can't allow those things. We have to have a state government that obeys the will of the people and obeys their wishes. We have to have a state government that acts as though they represent the people and not subjugating the people.
Is there any way to prevent that cronyism, though, that good old boy network idea?
Well, there's no way to prevent it in California because they encourage it. They don't want to prevent it. I mean, you know, you have a corporation, we'll call it California, where essentially the stockholders and upper management, they like the way things work. They're fine with the way things work.
Okay, I have another question or two before we wrap up the show. And after what happened in Weed, the people are really concerned about fire protection. Cal Fire has a big presence up here, and they're afraid that somehow they're going to lose that.
Well, they won't, because once again, the state legislative analyst's office is of the opinion, and the attorney general is of the constitutional opinion, that all of the assets and all of the things that lie within the boundaries of the new state of Jefferson, formerly the state of California, will belong to the state of Jefferson. All of those assets, all of those helibases, all of those pieces of equipment will belong to us. Quite frankly, Northern California possesses most of the expertise. I cannot imagine in my wildest dreams that employees of Cal Fire would choose to move to Lower California, where they have the highest taxes in the nation, the most expensive gasoline in the nation. They're charged by the mile for how much they drive. They're subjugated every single day. Their children are taught Common Core and the lies associated with Common Core in school. And their mission in life is to save the fish while the people go hungry. Can you imagine anyone with any sense would want to move to Southern California with their expertise instead of staying here where we would have constitutional republic and one of the most beautiful places on earth? I think we will have the most experienced state firefighting agency in the nation.
Unfortunately, they are we right now. We're subject to all of those things you just said that they in Southern California are, plus the new laws that are coming online in the next 2 years that are just too onerous.
Yes, we are, and we've allowed it. But we can change the dynamic. All we have to do is get enough counties for a viable state to sign declarations and petitions to withdraw. We need to head.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself.
Welcome back to Examine Life with Pat and Steve on KKRN 88.5 Bella Vista and Round Mountain.
Did we get you back, Mark?
Yes, I'm back.
Thank you.
Okay. All we really have to do is educate our friends and family Southern California as to what it is we need to do and why we need to do it. And then we need to ask for their help. This is a win-win. Southern California would be free to solve problems we can't even understand. They could get rid of all of the red counties. They call us the welfare counties now. And they could keep their vast resources and concentrate their political power and do the things they need to do. We, on the other hand, would be free to create a constitutional republic that secures the rights and liberties of the individual and his ability to make a living for himself and his family. I think the time has come for 51.
Is 51, define 51 for us and our listeners.
51st state.
I see. Okay. that's not how I thought of it, but that's okay.
No, and I think we have, you know, California is a big state. The terrain, the people, the cities, the infrastructure, there's just differences. I think Northern California would thrive better with a different type of state government, and Southern California would probably do just as well with the concentration of the types of people and infrastructures and landscapes that they have. I just think it would actually be a good separation for both sides.
It truly would be a win-win for both Southern California and for Jefferson, and we're convinced of that. We don't want anybody to lose out of this deal. This isn't a contest where someone wins and someone loses. This is a way for all of us to pursue our dreams and to do them in the way that represents us the best. And all areas, all places need representation. And it's interesting to me that there are people 500 to 900 miles away who feel qualified to govern our lives. And we don't think they are, and the state of Jefferson is a way to do something about that.
Is the campaign or PR that needs to be done, is that going to be to state legislators, or is that going to be the actual people in Southern California? That's a lot of minds who need to be changed.
Well, it's primarily the state legislators who are going to vote on this. So those are the people we need to talk to, and we need to educate. And we did some of that. When we turned in two declarations from Siskiyou and Modoc County and recorded them in Sacramento, we went into the office of several legislators. One of them was Daryl Steinberg's office. I spoke to his chief legislative analyst, a very very bright woman who I liked a lot. I was prepared not to like her, and I couldn't help it. She was a nice lady, and she was extremely intelligent. And after we spoke with her for about a half an hour, you know what she said? She said, "You have an extremely compelling message, and I'm not against it."
And I agree. Your message is compelling. I myself was carried quite a bit by our discussion on the last program we had with you.
Well, she said she wasn't against the idea. She said, "Now we have a job of education, because there are a lot of people in Sacramento who just hate change." And I said to her, I said, "Do you mean to tell me that they would be happy to subjugate us because they can't stand the concept of change?" And she said, "Yes."
But change, ironically, California is changing everything about our personal lives, from trying to tax our wells to not allowed to carry a two-handed plastic bag, and yet they don't want to change.
But that's actually not, that's not change for them. That's business as usual. It just leads to change for us.
That's right. So this lady, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. It's not intentional, because I would like to mention her name. She was extremely bright and articulate and intelligent, and she wasn't against what we were trying to do. She said, "We have a big job ahead of us. We need to educate the Democratic leadership," and that's true, "and we need to educate the people of Southern California that this is a win for them as well. And we need to enlist their help in educating their legislators to vote for separation and the formation of the first state split in 150 years.
So how many legislators do you have to convince?
We need to change 16 votes in the Assembly and 11 votes in the Senate, and that's certainly achievable.
That's not insurmountable numbers. I thought it was going to be much bigger than that.
No, not at all. We only need 51%. We need 50 plus one. That's it. We don't need the governor. We don't need the president of the United States. Now, I have been told that if conservatives retake the Senate in the United States Senate this year, that the arithmetic looks pretty good for us winning in the federal legislature. So, actually, we've gone a long way. We have a lot of, we have a long way to go. But quite frankly, I'm extremely hopeful. I think this can be done. However, it's going to take 10 times 10,000 people, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to get people involved for the cause of liberty.
Well, I think the discussion needs to go on, and that's why we've had you on the show. Is when I had talked to Steve about the idea, I had heard you speak in Anderson way back in January, I believe it was, and it was a compelling idea. I did not go with an open mind of, gee, I want a new state. I went with the idea, what kind of crackpots are talking about this new state? And I was convinced by the four or five speakers that were there what a good logical solution this was to a lot of the problems of our frustration here in the North State.
I think it's the only solution, and it's interesting because this solution addresses a great many problems. You know, I went to a meeting with the Fish and Game Commission about the wolf, and the next day I went to a meeting about the wells and water regulation, and I've been to meetings about so many things I can't even count them all. The state of Jefferson addresses the majority of those issues. Now, people will say, well, what about the feds? The feds still own most of the land. However, under the equal footing doctrine and using the 9th and the 10th Amendment and the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8, we would be successful in keeping the federal government at bay in probably 90% plus cases. We could literally limit federal intervention to that which our state agreed to and wanted.
I'd be happy just to get rid of the state AB 109 with the crime rate we're having.
I think Go ahead.
That would be automatic. There wouldn't be any AB 109 in Jefferson.
Well, I think we just need the will. You're correct about being able to hold off the federal government. I don't think California, as it is, just doesn't have the will for a variety of reasons. And we're just about out of time. We have about a minute left. So I just want to say that we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us again. And every time I hear you talk, I realize how possible this thing is, and I think about how it's been done before. And I really think we just need to explain it in the proper way to people to understand that this is a beneficial thing.
And you do us a favor by informing people of what this movement is really all about. It's not a bunch of crackpots.
It is not. It's about restoring representation and using that representation to restore our economy and secure.
Thanks again, Mark. We really appreciate you having on the program, and hopefully we'll do this again sometime in the future.
I'd love to do it anytime. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to leave you now. Next time, we're going to be talking about the state initiatives and the state elected officials. It's going to be time to vote, and we sure hope you all get out there and vote.
And you've been listening to Examine Life on KKRN Bella Vista in Round Mountain at 88.5 FM.
Have a very happy, wonderful evening.
Good night.